Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio here on the final weekend in January. I am Chaz Cook of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, joined this week by Brian Skelis from William Ravis Mortgage. Brian, can you believe we are through January come what, Wednesday? We're all done?
That's amazing. Yeah, it flew by.
I cannot believe that next weekend we potentially will be talking about the first month of 2024 Connecticut real estate numbers. I mean, it just definitely just flew by.
It's a new year, and we're going to talk about it. Some things are similar to 2023, some things are not.
Well, you and I were having a conversation, I believe, yesterday, actually, and you mentioned that business is booming. I mean, you've doubled, almost doubled up since November, December timeframe.
Business is booming. I have 20 closings in February, which is the best month I've had in over a year.
And why do you think that is? Because I've got some thoughts, and we've got some thoughts to share with the 94.9ers out there, but why do you think that is?
Everybody keeps asking me that. I was at like a family dinner, and I was telling my father-in-law, I'm like, oh, I'm working. I got up early on Saturday. I'm working late every day. I don't have time to do this or that. He's like, why is it busy? You know, I thought rates were high. Why are you busy?
Well, and last week you mentioned they had tipped back up to over 6.7.
They went up again this week, okay. And it's still busy. Well, a couple reasons. I mean, one is December's over.
In hindsight,
I didn't think December was that busy, but when you think about the fact that it is a holiday month and usually it's super quiet in December, in hindsight, December was actually pretty busy for December. Mm-hmm. And now that December's over, I'd say ever since January 1st, it's been going pretty busy. And I hate to say I told you so, but I've been saying in November and December, I told everybody buy a house in November and December. There's a good chance we're going to get a lot of competition. Mm-hmm. And so far, that's exactly what's been happening. I mean, it's hard to take the realtor and the mortgage broker's advice when they're like, you should buy a house right now, because we pretty much say that all the time.
We would never steer the 94.9ers wrong, right? They are our loyal listeners.
Absolutely.
They've been here with Byron for probably coming up on, I think, kind of like 7 years. I've been part of the show for over three now, and you've been with us for over a year. So I think we've earned their trust a little bit.
We have. And I tell people all the time, you know, don't get a mortgage. You know, if you call me for a refinance and you've got a 3% rate, I'm going to tell you, keep the mortgage that you have. But essentially what's happened is, it's not snowing a lot, which I think is helping, but there's just a lot of people that are paying a significant amount of money for rent and are ready to buy. You know, I think people have kind of given up on the idea that rates are going back down to 4% anytime soon. I mean, everybody's kind of like, okay, this is where they are. Mm-hmm. Rates are a lot better, even though they have been going up for the last 6 weeks, and we've gone kind of from mid fives, we're getting close to seven again. It's still better than the 8% we were at in October. And it's very starting to feel very similar to spring of 2023. In the first half of January, all my buyers were making offers and most of them are getting accepted. As I said, I got a lot of closings in February. The third week of January, wrapping up, I think what we just had is the third week of January. It's the fourth, I don't know. But the second half of January, I had six buyers make offers, and I'm still cranking out tons of pre-approvals for people that want to buy in the next few months, but I didn't have a lot of loans to hand in this week. And I was like, well, what's going on? I was catching up on some emails Thursday, Friday, and I was like, I sent pre-approvals to a bunch of people. I haven't heard from them. So I followed up. I was like, hey, what's going on with your offer? And I had six people didn't get the house, got outbid by somebody else.
Got outbid.
Yeah. Deja vu, 2023 all over again. So we are. I don't know if it'll sustain. Hopefully, we'll start seeing some more houses coming up for sale in the next few months, but it's competitive again. That's what's going on.
You made a great point there. In January 2023, you know, we didn't really have a winter. Right? We went from turn of the year right into the spring market, essentially. 2022, we saw the same thing happen. Like, December ended and we just rolled into our quote-unquote spring market, which usually doesn't really take effect until like the first week of March. We say it kicks off like the Monday after the Super Bowl. But, you know, now you've had 20 years of history. Do you think that part of that trend is because we have had such mild winters? I mean, it was 50 degrees 2 days ago, right?
It's definitely part of it, for sure. I mean, if it snows 8 inches, it drastically reduces how much people go out and look at houses,
right?
For sure. I mean, it is seasonally, January and February and March are kind of like pre-approval season.
Yep.
You know, we're doing a lot of pre-approvals. And then typically April, May, and June are the busy closing months. Mm-hmm. You know, historically, June is one of my busier months for closings. But last year, I mean, last year, 2023 was very different than a lot of other years prior to that. I remember I did about 40 pre-approvals in February of 2023, which was a lot. I mean, I was working hard to do that many pre-approvals. And I think in March, I only closed 7 loans. So, you know,
and then in March,
I did another 40 pre-approvals in March, you know, right. So last spring I was pre-approving like 40 people a month and I was only closing like 7 loans a month. And that was attributable, you know, in my opinion, in my experience, to just a lot of people getting outbid.
A lot of competition. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, I've been watching the numbers on, you know, we have on the CTMLS, we have what's called a hot sheet where we as agents can go on and look at new listings that come on and look at properties that close in the areas that we service so that we can stay up to date on like market trends. But I did see a lot of those properties that went under like middle of November, beginning of December that were closing middle of January now. A lot of them weren't going for listing price. They had actually gone for slightly under. So yeah. To your point, it was a great time to buy.
I did see some people get some deals.
Deals,
too.
Right? Yeah. Quote unquote deals that we haven't been
under
really
list prices. I mean,
a deal in this
in
market.
2023, that was pretty good.
So it is interesting. Yeah, we saw that big drop in rates. Then we saw a lot of people get after it and find some deals and properties that may have been sitting. But the other big thing that I have seen, especially leading into these last couple of weeks, was a lot of price improvements where people were trying to get those higher values and the competition wasn't there to support it. So they've had to bring their prices down. But coincidentally, as soon as the price comes down, the competition goes up. So when there is a lot of competition, obviously you can kind of shoot for the moon a little bit and maybe, you know, start a little higher in your asking price. When the competition slows, you have to come back down to what we would call fair market value. And that creates the buzz around the property. It'd be interesting to see what happens here in February and in March if we start to see the list prices start to creep back up and start to continue to drive home appreciation back up because of the level of competition.
And I mean, I was bumped into one of my managers the other day and he was asking me what's going on. I basically told him a story similar to what I just told you. And he's like, really, I'm surprised it's getting competitive or I don't remember exactly what he said. But anyways, he showed me some of the company numbers. And I think the number of new pre-approvals that came in last week was about 3 times as many as it was about 6 weeks ago. So
that's interesting. You know. And, you know, we're going to talk about this when we come back after the break. But you mentioned that, you know, people are just tired of waiting. You're getting a lot of pre-approvals. But they did a survey and 80% of homebuyers are willing to adjust their plans in 2024. So I want to get your opinion on that and where the mindset of the buyer has gone and how they're navigating the current real estate market. When we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, joined by Brian Skelly from William Ravis Mortgage. And before we hit the break, we were talking about what Brian has been seeing in the mortgage world and in terms of pre-approvals. I mean, he's pumping out 40 a month, which is just an astonishing number. And you know what else is an astonishing number? Number to service station equipment. 1-800-801-TANK, the residential tank specialist. That's where Byron's at today. Him and Martin McKinney are having a brainstorming session for the upcoming Jenks Home Show, which is going on February 16th through 18th at Mohegan Sun. Have you ever been to that, Brian?
No, I never have.
All right, so you got to go to it. They host it at Mohegan Sun right when you walk in the door on the right-hand side. That's the service station equipment booth. We've done the show there live some years, but you're also going to see the Irish Springs pool water truck. This thing's got, I mean, I asked Byron last week, I think it's like 100 feet long. They shine it up. It's all polished. We team up with them. We offer out a reusable grocery bag. It's insulated. Very nice. You might even get to see the Tank Man.
Ooh.
They've always got some fun raffles and prizes there. And every once in a while, Martin pops his head in the booth and makes sure that we're doing our job. So that, again, that is coming up February 16th through 18th at Mohegan Sun Casino. I believe this is the 40th. Is that the
right
number
after
here?
Valentine's Day.
43rd annual Home and Garden Show.
Get your Valentine a house for Valentine's Day this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry to talk over you there.
If we have a little time a little later on, we'll tell you some of the exhibits and things that you can check out when you do go visit the 43rd Annual Home and Garden Show brought to you by Jenks Productions. And make sure, like I said, when you walk in right on the right, you can't miss us and you can't miss Service Station Equipment, your residential tank specialist, residential tanking specialist. There we go. I'm a little too energetic today. I got to tone it down a little bit.
No more coffee for Chess.
No more coffee for me. But yeah, so you mentioned a lot of pre-approvals coming in, a lot of people starting to get offers adjusted. And Remax recently put out a survey that I think might shed some insight as to why we've seen a slight uptick, as well as, you know, interest rates being below 7 and people just kind of feeling a little bit of confidence. We talked about that last week, right? Consumer confidence was up, builder confidence was up. So, and the mild winter, right? We know that helps, but
people didn't get a house last year. They took a little break. They're coming back.
I mean, they probably had to put it on pause when rates hit 8%. Now, like, you know, they've got it down. Maybe they got their pre-approval, got it locked in at 6.5%. And they're like, we're going to shop until we drop.
Yep.
But yeah, 80% of home buyers are willing to adjust plans in 2024. What do you think that means, adjust plans? Do you think that that means that they're going to like buy a multifamily maybe?
Yeah, you know, well, one of the things that first thing I ask everybody is, you know, how can I help? What were you thinking about doing? Yeah. That's how I start every conversation. And usually then I start saying, well, what kind of property do you want to buy? You want to look for a house? You're looking for a condo? What town are you looking in? And people sometimes have a certain thing that they want. And when there's limited selection available, they'll change their search parameters. They'll look in a bigger radius, go to different towns. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe originally they wanted a house. Now they'll say, well, let me look at a condo. Or maybe they originally wanted a condo. Now they'll say, well, let me look at a 2-unit. So people have to be more flexible. Yep. When you have scarce options, you got to be flexible.
Well, and you hit the nail on the head with a couple of them, because according to this new Remax report, nearly 8 in 10 prospective homeowners are willing to make adjustments to their home buying plans to achieve home ownership this year. Right. So they're not thinking 3 years down the road. You know, they're frustrated probably from not getting it last year, to the point you mentioned, but this year. And some of those adjustments mentioned in the study include buying a fixer upper. Mm-hmm. So you could do that a couple different ways. You could buy a fixer upper, put the sweat equity into it. You could buy a fixer upper and potentially take advantage of if you're using FHA, a 203K loan, or if you're going conventional, a construction loan, and finance some of those repairs into it. The more I learn about that program, the more I don't understand why people don't take it. I know it can be arduous and it's a lengthy process, and in a competitive market, it's harder to ask for like a 60-day close.
I could tell you why most people don't do it if you want to know. Like,
let's think about it. Let's say you have a budget of $400,000.
Yep.
And that's one of the most competitive price points in the state of Connecticut. We know that, right? Between $400,000 and $500,000. But you can find a home for $225,000 that maybe needs $100,000 worth of work. So now you're essentially buying that home for $325,000. That $100,000 that you're going to put into it is going to be financed over 30 years at the rate that you're in. And you came in $75,000 under budget, but your after repair value, your ARV is what they would call it once the work is done, is probably going to bring that home right back up to the $400,000 threshold where you originally wanted to be.
There's definitely pros and cons to these programs. I mean, when I bought my first house, it was a 2-bedroom cape with an unfinished attic, and it was about 1,000 square feet. And the attic, I was young. I had 2 roommates. So, boy, this conversation is going in all kinds of interesting directions here. So I had 2 roommates.
Love it.
And I was living in an old Lyme. It was kind of quiet. I grew up in Madison. All my friends lived in Brantford. I was like, I'm tired of living by myself. I'm going to go buy a house in Brantford. I found these 2 guys that I went to college with. I was like, if I buy a house, will you guys live with me?
So you didn't buy it with them. You bought it and they rented.
I bought it, but I had the roommates lined up ready to go.
Okay, because adjustment number 2 was buying a home with a friend or family member.
Which is...
I don't recommend that, but that's why I was curious if you went that route.
Right? It's a lot simpler if only one person owns the home. Because sooner or later, you're going to part ways, and then that gets a little complicated.
Right.
But I will say, I am talking to a lot of people that are buying homes with friends and family members. We'll talk about that in a minute. But anyways, the renovation story. So I bought this property, and what happened was, because the attic, if you picture a cape, it's kind of got the slanted walls on top.
Yep.
And so it was pretty big area. So anyways, long story short, I bought the place. I had one roommate move in. The second roommate moved in before I was done with the renovations. I was sleeping on the porch for like 6 weeks. You know, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Speaking of making arrangements, but I renovated the second floor, you know, and it increased the square footage of the house from 1,000 to 1,500 square feet. And then it made it from a 2-bedroom, 1 bath into a 3-bedroom, 2 bath. Mm-hmm. So
huge resale value.
Yeah. When you think about increasing the value, are you adding bathrooms? Are you adding bedrooms? Are you adding square feet? Those are the 3 things, especially from an appraiser's perspective. Like, if you just change the color of the kitchen, that doesn't really, you know, you could spend $10,000 on new kitchen tiles.
Right. You have to balance it between aesthetics and functionality.
That's what I did in my current house. My wife's very happy, but I don't think we had any value when we did that. So those are some of the advantages. If you can, you know, take a diamond in the rough, increase the square footage, increase the number of bedrooms, increase the number of bathrooms, that can be very lucrative from a financial standpoint. But I was sleeping on the porch for 2 months and I was, you know, 24 years old and didn't care. But some people don't want to live through that. So just buying a home on its own, just buying a regular home that's ready to go, is a lot of work and a stressful process. Mm-hmm. And if you've got kids or, you know, you've got other family members that are moving with you, you know, you're changing school districts, you're packing up all your stuff in boxes, you're, you know, wondering if the mortgage is going to get approved, you're wondering if the home inspections are going to go okay. Like, I do this every day. And last time I moved, I was stressed and there was a lot going on. So people that have never moved before, or people that only move once every year, you know, 10 years, moving is intense and it's stressful. So take all that stuff and now add on the renovation component.
Fair enough.
Yeah. It's a lot. Yeah. So when you get a renovation loan, the main benefit is you can borrow more money and you can make renovations after closing, which is very different than a regular mortgage. And as we discussed, that's a lot of benefits. The downsides are the renovation rates are going to be higher. So you're paying a little bit higher rate, figure maybe like 3/4% higher interest rate.
So now we're at 6.75, 6.8. So they'd be paying closer to 7.5.
Probably you're looking at maybe, depending on the credit score and the type of loan, maybe high sevens, something like that, instead of like high sixes. So that's a factor. You're going to pay some more fees. So you typically have to hire a renovation consultant to review the bid from the contractor. You're going to have to pay for inspections during the process. And you can't just do whatever you want. I think that's a big limiting factor. Like, you know, in this case, when I bought my house and I renovated it, you know, I just hired whoever I wanted. I put stuff on a credit card. I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants, scraping together the money that I had and making it work. Whereas if you're going to do a renovation loan, the whole scope of the project, the budget, the bid, all the work, the materials, all needs to be laid out in advance and needs to be approved by the bank before you can even acquire the property. Another challenging component that is, you can't typically do the work yourself is not allowed. So some people are like, oh, I'm just going to do the work myself.
Right. You have to be a licensed contractor, insured, depending on the age of the house. You might have to be lead paint certified.
Well, even if you are a licensed contractor, they still don't want you doing the work yourself, because the concern is, like, if you're running a construction company and you stop your construction business to work on your own house, how are you going to pay the mortgage if you're not working? So they generally don't want the borrower to be the person doing the work, even if they are a licensed contractor. Mm-hmm. So then you have to go find a licensed contractor. Then the contractor has to be pretty good with paperwork. And there are some larger contracting companies that have an office manager are great with paperwork. But sometimes when it's, you know, a guy in a pickup truck and he's on the job site every day and you're trying to get your forms filled out and you can't order your appraisal until you get your bid for the work to be completed, that's tough. I mean, I just did some renovations at my house and it was really challenging to just get somebody to show up, give me a reasonable price and give me a bid, you know, quickly. So,
and then complete the work in a timely manner after all of that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, getting the work done after closing is another thing, but a lot of people just give up before they even order the appraisal, because I'm like, okay, great. Congratulations. You just got your offer accepted. You got pre-approved for a renovation loan. Now, you know, the sellers want to close in 60 days. The sellers want to close in 70 days. It takes 2 weeks to get an appraisal done. You cannot order the appraisal until you have the bid for all the work. So that's the first step. Once you get your offer accepted, go get the bid, you know, and then, you know, then they're meeting with the contractor, they're meeting with the home inspector, they're meeting with the renovation consultant. Almost every project ends up costing more than you thought it was. You know, you thought it was going to be a $40,000 job. Next thing you know, it's a $70,000 job and you're trying to get the forms filled out. You can't get the forms filled out. You can't get your appraisal ordered and you're paying these extra rates and fees and stuff. And it's a lot. So, you know, when I'm talking to somebody, a renovation loan, I kind of try and scare them a little bit,
right?
Not out of coming from a place of love, like, you know, hey, this is what you're going to go through. Are you really up for this? Are you up for this?
I don't know if I would consider it scaring. It's like, hey, this is your realistic roadmap, right? Like, I want you to be prepared. You're going to have to be immensely patient.
Yeah.
You're going to have to find a way to manage the stress, but there are, you know, a lot of advantages if you can get through that whole process, right?
Yeah. If you can get to the end of the road,
you're good.
It's great. But you just got to really ask yourself if you're up to go through all that, and not everybody is.
So imagine one of these mentioned in the study, right? So we mentioned buying a fixer-upper, buying a home with a friend or family member. Now imagine buying a fixer-upper with a friend or family member and trying to go through that process. Borrowing from friends and family, putting less than 20% down, buying a multifamily home, buying a home with a longer work commute, buying a tiny or prefabricated home, and making an all-cash purchase are the top reasons that were given here in this study as to why people are willing to make an adjustment and how they plan to go about it. We've got a few more data points here. We've also got a really interesting article about what might be coming to the small little shoreline town of Westbrook that we're going to share with you guys when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. Welcome back to CT Real Estate Radio. I am Chaz Cook of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate, joined by Brian Skelly from William Ravis Mortgage. And before we went to break, we were talking about all the different reasons why home buyers have been looking at alternative routes in order to purchase a home in this competitive market. And now we're back with the One Team Weekly Rewind, brought to you by Service Station Equipment. Make sure you come by and see us at the 43rd Annual Home and Garden Show at Mohegan Sun. As I mentioned before, the Service Station Equipment booth will be right inside the door on the right-hand side. You will not be able to miss us. And if you do miss us, watch out, because Dougie Braun, the Tank Man, might throw one of those rubber duckies at you that he's known for having there. So we had ourselves a great week here for the One Team. Interesting to, you know, Brian's point earlier about all the under contracts he's been seeing and, you know, people getting offers approved, because we had one new listing, 8 under contract, and 7 closings. Our one new listing was 13 Thompson Avenue in Putnam, Connecticut. This hit the market for $335,000, so well under the median sales price here in the state of Connecticut. You've got 3 bedrooms, 1 bath, just over 1,500 square feet. Beautiful lot, got about a third of an acre there. Welcome home to this inviting and move-in ready 3-bedroom ranch-style house. Tastefully updated with an array of windows, ensuring that this home is flooded with natural light and just beckons to you as you enter. This is a Lee Barr listing, by the way. Shout out to Lee Barr, one of the hardest working men in real estate. He is actually downstairs. I was going to try and bring him up here to talk about his listing, and he was like, no, you got it covered. I got work to do. I said, all right, fair enough. But if you would like a private showing of 13 Thompson Avenue in Putnam, Connecticut on the market for $335,000, you can reach out to Lee at oneteamct.com. All right, under contracts, 8 of those bad boys. We had under contracts in Preston, Norwich, Meriden, Middletown, New London, and Clinton. Closing, 7 of those. Congratulations to our buyers, sellers, and investors. We had closings in Basra, Deep River, Westerly, Newington, Guilford, Ledyard, and Salem. All right, that's going to wrap. Oh, no, we got open houses. Just one going on tomorrow, Sunday, January 28th. Always on Sunday, an opportunity to go to 66 High Street and check out the award-winning condos over there from 12 to 2 p.m. on Sunday, January 28th. Again, if you have not been over there to check out the residences at 66 High Street, this is the third and final building. So once they sell out, they will be gone until somebody gets ready to sell again. I can only imagine somebody who bought one of those in maybe 2020, 2021, if they decided to turn around and sell now. Because since then, they've continued to break record after record in those buildings, each one having a slightly different layout and look to it. But it has not stopped people from absolutely just falling in love with the construction and the attention to detail there. So now that will do it for this week's One Team Weekly Rewind. And before the break, we teased you guys with a little insight as to what might be happening in the town of Westbrook on the shoreline. Now, Westbrook's such an interesting town because a lot of people don't even like think about it. They're like, oh yeah, Old Saybrook, Clinton. Like, yeah. No. There's a whole town in between Old Saybrook and Clinton, and it's called Westbrook.
I'm guilty of this too. I was hanging out with some real estate agent friends of mine recently, and somehow it came up the topic of zip codes, and I was like, oh, I know
06498 zip Westbrook.
Stole my thunder there. But we went down, and I was like, and I knew all the zip codes. I was like, oh, New London 06320. Waterford 06385, East Lyme 06333, Old Lyme 06371, Old Saybrook 06475, Clinton 06413, Madison. And I was like, and I just went right over it. Like, right, I don't know the zip code in Westbrook. I have like the only one I don't know. Well, I guess nobody buys houses in Westbrook. So, I mean, they said they're not calling me for mortgages. I don't know where.
There's just not a ton, right? I have a couple of clients looking in the Westbrook area, and you know, I've been watching the market for them. There's not a ton of inventory.
It's a smaller population town. It's not like
seasonal population town too. Yeah. Very centric on the beach community.
I love Westbrook. If you're from Westbrook, no, we're not hating on you.
They have some absolutely stunning neighborhoods. If you get away from the beach out in like the Toby Hill area over near like their high school, they've got some gorgeous homes.
Really nice down there.
They got some gorgeous beach homes. Westbrook Town Beach is great as well. Allison on our team lives over on right off of Seaside, which
is kind
of
quiet over there too. Not a lot of traffic, you know, like
except one part of town. One part of town has a lot of traffic. Exit 65. And that's where the outlets used to be.
Yeah,
where they are for now.
Toyota and the Honda. You got the car dealership. The hospital there. Yeah, there's lots going on.
And then the Highliner.
There's a movie theater there.
Can't forget about the Highliner, that bar that everyone forgets about too. That's like across from the outlets.
I've been down there. Yeah, they have a heavy pour at the Highliner.
But the Lexington partners are looking to put an eye-opening redevelopment into the Westbrook outlets, including apartments, townhouses, and commercial space. They're looking to put $425 million into completely redeveloping the outlets, the movie theater. Everything back there is going to get a total facelift.
Yeah, for a little sleepy town like Westbrook, this is a massive development.
When this comes in, nobody will ever forget the name of Westbrook, Connecticut again. 06498 is going to be on the map.
06498. All right, I got to remember that.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to post this
up. Are these for sale or are these all rentals?
They're going to be a combination of both. The apartments will be some rentals and the townhomes will be for sale.
Okay.
What I understand, we're going to break down this article here. But yeah, it goes on to say the Westbrook outlets could soon be demolished to make way for a roughly $425 million development mixing 595 apartments, 100 townhomes, a new hotel, restaurants, and entertainment space less than a half a mile from the shoreline. So that's also going to bring a ton of traffic into anybody who might want a vacation in one of those Westbrook cottages.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say you want to take the family out for the day, head over to this new development, walk around, check out some shops. It's going to be like going to downtown Mississippi.
There's like a little amphitheater there in the photo too. That must be the entertainment space they're talking about.
Yeah, we're going to get there. There's an amphitheater. But this is actually being proposed by the prolific Hartford-based developer Lexington Partners. It's a 49.7-acre property at 314 Flat Rock Place in Westbrook that would require demolition of four 1995 vintage retail buildings.
Vintage. Oh my God, I feel so old.
257,115 square feet. When I read that 1995 vintage, I'm like, dude, come on. Like, and a cinema built in 1999. They go on to say it will feel like a town center. That's what their president, Chris Riley, said. It will have a main boulevard with apartments over retail and a lot of open space. I think that's great because right now the outlets over there, they're at 25% occupancy, or there's 25% occupied.
Yeah.
That is
25%. Is that low? I mean, I've been over there and it's, yeah. Well, actually, I haven't been over there. I think last time, when was the last time you went to shopping at the outlets?
I have to say, I've been over there a couple of times. One, because they have a cryotherapy place there. So that's when you get in the tank and they like bring you down to like a negative 130 degrees and it's just your head sticking out. So as a runner, you know, sometimes you got to like get some work done over there. Jill and I, my wife and our dog Ray, we had the opportunity to do like we were on a magazine cover and I wanted to get us matching flannels, and the only place I could find matching flannels was at Old Navy, so I went to the Old Navy outlet.
Okay.
So since August I've been there five times, which is more than I've been there in the last 5 years. Okay. So I have been over there. It is kind of a scary place, just because it's so quiet, you know.
Yeah. Well, they put that Kohl's in Old Sabra.
Yeah.
So
that took a lot away from that Kohl's.
I would imagine that too.
Yep.
But I mean, I think I don't live in Westbrook, but it's nice that it's so close to the highway. So it's not going to create a lot of traffic down near the green, which I would think would be like the main objection that people would have.
And far enough away from Route 1, right, to how you get to all the beaches. So it is far enough removed where it won't have that much of an impact on the day-to-day. But yeah, that exit 65 area, I think, is going to need some redevelopment, some fine-tuning.
Yeah, maybe the on-ramps and off-ramps and stuff like that.
But they're looking for a brighter future. You know, Lexington, which would have a minority ownership stake, had developed plans for a 965,565 square foot of new apartment space and five buildings with some ground for commercial space. The buildings would include 30 studio apartments, 209 one-bedroom units, 306 two-bedroom dwellings, and 50 three-bedroom dwellings. I mean, that right there, there's not a lot of apartments to rent on the shoreline.
I mean, it's just a housing shortage in general. I mean, we say that almost every week on this show. There's just not enough houses for everybody that wants one. So, you know, sometimes it's a little bit of the not in my backyard sentiment, but I think this is, pretty good solution.
The plan also calls for a pool partnered with a 14,400 square foot amenity space, as well as a 1,000-seat amphitheater.
There's going to be a pool. There's a pool?
A pool, an amphitheater. There'd be a
it looks really nice.
74,000 square foot of commercial space, which would be occupied by restaurants.
Low maintenance.
They're looking to break ground here in the first two quarters of 2025 after they get all their
permits. Is this approved? Did they get the town approval?
They got the town approval and they're going through permitting. So if we can work that out this year, you know, they're going to have to look at wetlands and, you know, topography and things like that. Also require a wetlands review. Look at that. You think
it looks
awesome
this article in the photos. Look at the little downtown strip. It does look like a downtown.
It's going to be absolutely gorgeous, and I'm very excited to see it. And we're definitely going to be taking a few trips over there, getting some footage of the progress as they get through there. So stay tuned for that. And stay tuned for us on our final segment when we come back on CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. We are back on CT Real Estate Radio. Chaz Cook of the One Team at William Ravis Real Estate and Brian Skelly from William Ravis Mortgage, breaking all things down for you for your Connecticut real estate market, your local economy, interest rates, purchase programs. I mean, you name it, we got it covered. I mean, we even go so far as to bring you the trends to watch in 2024. What is on its way in and what is on its way out? This is a Zillow report as to what they see as the trends, fads, I guess, I don't know, decor style for 2024. I got to tell you, some of these I've never heard of. I was talking to Candace, our marketing director. She's the one who sent this to me earlier this week. She's like, brutalism? You don't know what brutalism is? I'm like, no. She's like, it's cold, dark, stone look. That's the number one trend to watch in 2024. It's characterized by raw, exposed materials. A mid-20th century design style is primed to continue its controversial comeback in 2024. Zillow has seen a 452% increase in the share for sale listings mentioning brutalist design.
So like exposed brick and stuff like that?
Black and steel, casement windows, raw concrete floors, you know, jagged, patented bronze light fixtures.
Well, there's a lot of old mills in New England too that
functional
get converted.
And sustainable, right? Yeah, the style stripped back interiors act as blank canvases. So think about like, and they actually have some condos in Norwich. There's the Thermos, I can't remember the name of the building. Yeah, they turned an old mill into that. So you've got
all
the
waterfall
pipes.
Isn't there a waterfall? Is that the one with the waterfall?
Yes. Yep, that's the one with the waterfall. Yeah. So they've done that in some condo buildings, and it is absolutely gorgeous, but I had no idea it was called brutalism.
I didn't know. Neither did I. If you asked me what brutalism was, I'd be like, Chaz, this is a family show.
It's a family show, right? Next up on the list, they've got sensory gardens or pathways. Sensory gardens have been surging in popularity on Zillow, with homeowners and homebuyers prioritizing functional and beautiful outdoor space as a way to reconnect with nature. If you had asked me in 2021, I would have thought that would have been on the trends list just because we were spending so much time at home.
Yeah.
But I thought that would have popped up then. But they've seen it up, listings mentioning it, 314% compared to last year. So that is a booming number. I do love a good sensory garden. It's designed to engage all five senses and are believed to have therapeutic benefits. So
I saw this really funny comedian when I was scrolling through my Instagram the other day, and he does this whole bit about how he got this apartment, and he's this young guy. He doesn't know how to make the apartment nice. And he's like, what do I do to make the apartment nice? And they're like, get some plants from outside and bring them in. And then he's like, and what else do I do? And they're like, get some paintings. He's like, so he goes and gets paintings of these rivers and mountains, and he brings them inside. And he's like, for thousands of years, we were outside. Maybe we're not supposed to be inside.
Yeah, so bring everything from outside inside.
So that's funny. We should, I don't know, we can play his clip.
So speaking of outside, this is another outside one. This I have seen popping up more frequently. Cold plunge pools. People are making their own at home.
Yeah.
Cold plunge pools. Move over, hot tubs. Cold plunge pools are the hottest wellness trend of 2024.
These cold plunge pools are hot right now.
They're hot, right? The Zillow has seen an increase of the mention of cold plunge pools up 130%.
I mean, are people doing like built-in cold? I mean, because they're usually like, portable, aren't they?
But they have portable ones, or they're building them into stone, and like the liner in them, and they can fill them up.
Oh, like a hot tub.
Yeah, or like I've seen some people actually get like a, I guess it would be like a trough, like one of the big metal troughs, and they just get in it with the cold, put the water in it.
So they're outside and people are just, they're making really nice ones that are kind of like built into the landscape, like a human koi pond.
Yep. So do-it-yourself friendly cold plunge tubs are making this wellness practice accessible to almost anyone looking for a quick endorphin boost and adrenaline rush. And it is extremely beneficial in terms of recovery. I mentioned before I went to the Westbrook outlets to get cryotherapy. I went for the fancy way because that takes 3 minutes. You got to sit in a cold plunge for like 15 minutes to get the benefit. So I cut 12 minutes off and a lot of anticipation of getting into
there,
the pool.
There you go.
Pickleball courts. I mean, that's no surprise to me. We've got one here in Guilford, you know, occupying where Target's going to be going in.
Yeah, they're going to be looking for a new home.
You mentioned Ravis had a pickleball tournament right down in Brantford.
We did. Yeah, there was a fundraiser. A lot of people showed up. I thought I was a good pickleball player and I like showed up for this tournament and I think my brother and I played. We got beat like 2-11. We got crushed.
All right. And another, we finally found something Skelly's not good at. We played horseshoes with the man. We played bocce with the man. We've gone to trivia with the man.
I thought I was good at
it. He's kicked our butts in all of it.
Some of these guys take it pretty seriously.
But we just got to challenge him to a game of pickleball.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, we've got Murano glass chandeliers. Classic Murano glass chandeliers are the ultimate bespoke light fixture.
Really? That's popular again now?
Yeah. Handcrafted pieces of art from the island of Murano in Italy.
Yeah, I've been there. I went there on my honeymoon.
It was, as a designer fee.
Yeah.
You were there in Murano, Italy?
Yeah. Well, it's actually in Venice.
Okay.
So you go to Venice and you take a little water ferry or taxi. What do they call them? The Vesperados or something. They have these water taxis all over the city and they take you to the island and they blow glass. They've been blowing glass there for like hundreds of years. And I remember at the time, when did I get married? 2013, I got married and it was, I don't think it was that popular. I remember agents talking about like, oh, Murano glass used to be popular. So it's coming back.
It's coming back.
It is beautiful.
Intricate, quirky, and often colorful fixtures are now being featured 58% more often in listings on Zillow. I mean, with all the things there is to mention about a house, like for this to be up 60%, I know some of the other numbers were in like 300 range, but if you're mentioning a fixture, like it has to be that impactful to be in the property description.
Yeah. And actually my neighbor built a house next to me and then she sold it. I think she put in her listing agreement or the, what do you call it? When you want to take you in the seller's
inclusion, exclusion list.
Inclusion, exclusion is she wanted to take her chandelier with her.
Yeah.
She was an Italian lady. I'm not sure if it was Murano glass or not, but it was a beautiful chandelier. And she was taking that with her when she left.
I don't blame her. I can imagine to have it imported from Italy is going to cost a pretty penny.
Yeah, sometimes you got sentimental value too.
Or you went there on a trip like your honeymoon.
Yeah,
you bought one.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Next up on the incoming trends list for 2024, murals. I love this. I think this should always be a trend. Like,
I love murals.
Homeowners and homebuyers are saying goodbye to bland in favor of personality-packed homes. Eclectic maximalist interiors are increasingly featuring statement-making murals that dial up the drama in a living room, dining room, or bedroom.
Murals again, it's kind of like the inside-outside thing. I bet people are making these murals of it looks like you're in a garden.
Right, you go down to like a city or a beach city, like Florida, New York, and you see these gorgeous like wall murals. Old Saybrook has one on the side of one of their buildings right on the end of Main Street.
Kind of like graffiti style. Those are really cool.
Really well done. But now, people are just saying, okay, let's turn that wall around and like let's put that on the inside. And I think that's really cool. If I was a kid and like murals were a thing then and I could convince my parents to let me have one, I would have definitely done that.
So there's a local artist in Killingworth. This is Off the Wall Murals is his name. He did the ceiling at the chiropractor's office where I used to go to.
Yeah.
So I'd lay there and get my back cracked and I'd look up at the ceiling and it was like a nice tropical island. So.
Well, and if you don't want to paint it, wallpaper murals are now readily available and
depict
all types of scenes from large scale landscapes to modern botanicals too. So
it's like giant stickers you put on the wall and it looks like it's painted.
Wallpaper it out like you know, like a river scene coming down, right? You know?
Yeah. Well, they have, I mean, is it like the self-adhesive or you just where it sticks itself or do you have to do like the old school?
Do I look like a wallpaper guy to you?
Yeah. We're the wrong guys to be doing this segment.
We need Candace. We need our marketing director who's like an interior designer. Nicole, we need one of those guys to jump on the show here and explain to us how wallpaper murals work.
She's on the WTNH.
She is, yeah.
What is that? Should we give her a plug? What is it?
Thursdays at 4.
Thursdays at 4.
You can check out Nicole.
Stop listening to Real Estate Radio if you want to know about interior design trends.
Right. Let's bring her on the show. No, we're going to bring her
on.
We should. She hasn't been on a long time.
She's due.
It's been about a year, so I'm sure the 94 Niners are wondering, what is Nicole White up to? So stay tuned. That's in the works.
I didn't like that idea. I was just telling our listeners to not listen to us. I don't think that you're supposed to do that.
No. Listen more, and we'll bring you the talent. Keep listening. Don't ever stop listening. We'll bring you the talent.
She's coming.
So those are the trends that are coming in 2024, but what is on its way out? I'm going to botch the name on this. So maybe you can correct me. Shosugiban. Shosugiban is a traditional Japanese wood preservation technique that involves charring the wood surface to create a blackened, weathered finish. This type of burnt wood cladding became a mainstay of modern farmhouse design, creating a visually striking contrast against white shiplap siding. Interesting. On its way out. They've seen 69% fewer for sale listings featuring this design element on Zillow compared to last year. I could see it, though, because everyone loves shiplap. Everyone loves barn doors and farmhouses, especially like here on the shoreline, Guilford, Durham. Well, that's not really shoreline, but, you know.
Do they still like all that stuff? I do.
I think it's cool, but I mean, obviously we figured out about a minute ago that we are not the trendsetters
here.
Where
are you, Nicole? Come save us.
Another trend that's on its way out is the cloffice. The pandemic sparked many trends, some lasting, more athleisure, please.
The what?
The cloffice.
What is that?
And other short-lived, hold on, bye-bye bread baking. The cloffice appears to be among the latter. The office space created out of a closet was a trend that grew out of necessity as remote workers living in tight quarters became desperate for a quiet place to take Zoom meetings. I will tell you, and he's going to kill me for telling the 94.9ers this, but Byron, at his old house that he had when the pandemic hit, he had a cloffice.
Well, whatever works.
I mean,
whatever
he went all out, though. He had it like kind of built out. He had his books and his pictures and everything, but every Zoom meeting, he was sitting in his cloffice. So we'll have to ask him if he still has it or if he's putting one in. And as a new place, but yeah, in his old house, he had a cloffice.
Well, it's probably going out because everybody went and got more space. I talked to somebody the other day. She's like, there's two of us and we need four bedrooms because we need two home offices.
Yep. Well, yeah. So combined with the return to office movement, the cloffice is now appearing 54% fewer Zillow listings. Zoom rooms are also down by 41% and office sheds are highlighted 31% less frequently in listing descriptions. Office sheds, huh? I mean, I've heard of a she shed,
yeah,
or an office shed.
I don't.
My shed's not insulated. I don't think I'm going out there and like doing a Zoom meeting.
Yeah, you. I know some people that have an office shed. I've never heard it. It doesn't sound too great. I'm going out to the office shed,
right?
But a detached office, I think, would be if we're writing our property descriptions.
Yes,
detached, yeah, office
detached
space.
Office space. There
that
you go.
That would be nice. You know, if you're like sometimes the little kids come in, and just this morning I was trying to get a loan done before I had to go to work and I had to fix some Nintendos in the middle of the.
But if you had a shed to go outside in 35-degree weather and traipse through the yard and yeah. Snow and the mud and go to your office shed. man.
I don't know if that'd be better.
I don't know. But the final thing on its way out in 2024 is the Tuscan kitchen. Wanderlust and pop culture sensations sparked a wave of destination design during the pandemic. Okay. Spaces inspired by past or aspirational travels began trending as homeowners were hunkered down at home. So they're essentially saying, like, you went to Tuscan, you loved it, you knew you couldn't get back there for the next couple of years. What can you bring into your home that represents the Tuscan experience? The Tuscan kitchen. But now that homeowners can set off on global adventures again, they may no longer be seeking Mediterranean villa vibes. Mentions of Tuscan kitchens are down 45% from a year ago, while all things Parisian are down 26%. So there you have it. Those are your incoming and outgoing trends per Zillow for 2024. So if you're thinking about buying or selling, stay away from the outgoing ones. Focus on the incoming ones. Brian, people want to reach you,
schedule a loan appointment.com. Schedule a loan appointment.com.
Awesome. And if you would like to reach me, you can reach me at chaz@oneteamct.com. And that's going to wrap it up for us. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Cooper. And we'll see you all 94.9ers back here next week with a fresh new episode of CT Real Estate Radio on 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk.